and this was pretty new to me. I've always been this not caring guy, but then when I lost my mom, I would see a lot of sympathy in a way that would also irk me a bit. But then, like, you know, oh, that's so sad. Are you married? These are all questions you get in India, right? I mean, but then seeing me with the hand, obviously people have been like, whoa, what? That's cool. That's so cool. And I've had friends ask me, hey, when is this hand coming out? I want to see you with this cool stuff and all that. And that's kind of exciting.
Hello everyone, my name is Neil Patel and you're listening to the Indian Startup Show. Today I speak to Rishi Krishan. He's the CEO and co-founder of Symbionic. Symbionic is an affordable assistive technology startup that makes smart prosthetic devices. It all started due to a freak bus accident, which led him to losing his arm. So in this episode, he talks about the huge challenges of building bionic arms for people with disabilities. He talks about how he validated the idea by being a human guinea pig, talks about how they build empathy into the product, talks about technology and how the business model will work, talks about the first prototype and the key insights, talks about the user experiences and 3D printing, talks about what makes this bionic arm so special. And finally, he talks about advice he would give his younger self on what first-time founders should be focusing on, and much, much more. So please enjoy the show. Thank you. Hello, Rishi. Thanks for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Hey, hi. Hi, Neil.
Please tell the listeners what you do.
I'm CEO and co-founder of a startup called Symbionic. So at Symbionic, we are building high-end and affordable prosthetic arm for people with missing upper limbs.
And how did this journey start then?
When I was working for a non-profit before this, I used to travel a lot. And in September of 2018, a few days after my birthday, I was traveling to Pondicherry in a bus. The bus went and crashed another vehicle that led to the amputation of my right hand. So when I was looking for some proper products out there, like prosthetics or solutions that could help me regain my life back, you know, go back to driving my bike or, like, you know, doing my daily activities with these. Unfortunate news I got was there was nothing that was suited for my kind of amputation or, like, you know, exactly what I wanted to do. So the prosthetics available were either the cheaper ones had zero function. So it was just used as a cosmetic apparel, like, you know, just wear it to feel more like able-bodied people, or the functional ones were so extremely pricey that I could not dream of it. So we did a crowdfunding, and even that was not able to reach the amount that these prosthetics came in. That was kind of a bummer, I guess. And so me and my best friends, we sat down and thought, oh, you know, why don't we just 3D print a prosthetic arm? There's so many open source data available, right? And basically, that's how this all began.
Awesome. So you had the accident in 2018. It's now 2021, at the end of 2021.
Yeah.
How are things going so far?
When this thing started, right, it was not all rosy, like, you know, as I expected. I thought it would be pretty easy, like, you know, how hard would it be to build a bionic arm? I mean, and it has been super difficult, and it was, the learning curve was pretty steep, and yeah, but I think we've come to a very good place now. We have a prototype, like we are getting our first set of users now, and we're working with them to get a very, very good product out there.
Let's go back right to the start then, in terms of the MVP. A market research. How did you go about validating your ideas? Obviously, you probably tested it on yourself. You were like the human guinea pig. But in terms of the MVP, what did the first MVP look like?
Yeah, so the first MVP that we went and showed it to a few of our, like, you know, there was this incubator program by Vellore Institute of Technology. And the idea was that we would go and present to them what we have built. That was the start of Symbionic in the first place, because they were the ones who said, okay, you know what, you can build this as a startup. And the MVP we took was so crappy. Like, it was just like this 3D printed rough prototype. And I mean, all wires and everything hanging around. You can imagine, right? And that's basically where we began. I mean, we did not, that was not exactly what we had in our vision or dream. The way we validated, though, was pretty cool. So as an amputee, I had access to a lot of companies. So I would just go there and say, you know what, I want a prosthetic hand. Could you help me test out what you have? And I would wear and test, and I'll talk to them. So we went around to all prosthetic selling companies, Endoguide, B-Bionic, all of these guys, also understood their price points, understood their products, feature stories, and what is essentially inconvenient to me as a user. And when I could empathize with the pain that other users are also facing, that's where we thought, okay, so these are the things that we need to focus on. And and that's how we sort of figured out, okay, this is what we need to do.
And then what was the next step after that? So you've got all the sort of information that you require. It's still a bit of a leap to actually go ahead and sort of try and build it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, when we started off, it was not an idea to build a startup or a company in the first place. But then when we saw, like, you know, when we were doing this research for the incubation, and the idea that over 10 million amputees are there who are not able to access good solutions, especially because the prosthetics are priced at such high cost. And then when we kind of made some basic back of the envelope economics on what is this price point really for, like how is this price point even make any sense, that's when we realized probably there is somewhere the system is not built well. And this is probably where we can come in and make some changes, some tweaks, and build something that most people can afford. And and that would also help them go back to their daily life, you know, immediately. Like, oh, okay, I lost a limb. Obviously, that's sad. But then in a month or so after your hospitalization, you get used to this new prosthetic hand. And that's pretty cool. Right? But what happens now is like you usually go through this entire episode of, like, you know, rejection of so many ways. Okay, I can't get a advanced prosthetic, so I'll probably get something non-functional, which is cheap. But then you also wear that, and then you feel, okay, this is so heavy and uncomfortable. I'd rather not have any prosthetics at all. So there is this immediate sense of rejection for anything like this. So what we wanted to build at that point was, why don't we make something cooler and more functional, but at the same time, the price does not immediately, you know, reject a huge population of this, because a majority of amputee would not come from your, you know, cream of the crop population. So these are all the kind of thoughts that came across when we started. And I think the majority of places where we tried and learned from was a lot of people who have been building this. So we talked to ex-founders of prosthetic startups who actually were not able to keep it running, or they kind of exited or quit. But then we also spoke to a few researchers from IIC Bangalore and some people who have been building, like, you know, building prosthetics or researching about it, and just to understand what their thought processes are. Finally, just to break out of the biases that we might have as these, like, you know, developers and startup guys, I thought it was nice to go and talk to users themselves. So we found users apart from me and asked them, you know, what would you want in your hand? I mean, what would make you actually go out and say, okay, I definitely need this, and this would make my pain, like, you know, in terms of economic pain or whatever, go away, like, you know. And I think those were all pretty helpful for us to figure out, okay, this is what is needed in the market.
Awesome stuff. You must be very proud of what you've achieved so far.
Definitely. I think I'm very proud of my team that has helped me come this far. I mean, all of us have put in so much of time and efforts in learning what it entails to build a prosthetic hand. And the learning curve that each one of them has gone through has been tremendous. So I think that is something I've been proud of. So, yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned difficulties. Give me an example of what was the most difficult bit then, in the early days then?
So, I mean, I think the major difficulty would be understanding how to get user intent and then control the prosthetic. So we tried a lot of different ideas, right? We tried very low cost sensors to, like, you know, we also bought some very costly sensors and saw, okay, what is this made of? And then understanding how the technology works was a huge steep learning curve that all of us had faced. And then how to integrate that with the rest of the hand and the design. And there were so many design challenges. And all things aside, it was also all of us were not super experienced building startups, running a team, creating a team in the first place. So it was just me, Niranjan, and a few guys. So we had to build a much stronger team who could also work in that scale, right? So those things were super challenging, I guess. And especially, I think for me personally, the first year was a lot of learning, failing. Failing in terms of making the wrong design decision, or like, you know, some technical decisions that we would make unknowingly, but then we have to revert back and then start again. So these cycles of iterations were sort of, you know, painful, but then I think you have to go through them anyways.
What was the breakthrough moment then?
There wasn't any specific one big breakthrough moment, but then we did have a lot of small breakthrough moments. Yeah, like say, oh, okay, oh, this mechanism is what we need to use, man. This is what we need to do. And then, and very, very fortunately, I think the most fortunate thing I've had is a lot of people have been very actively helping us since the inception of this. I mean, even before the inception, when I just said that this is something I want to do, I had a few friends who took me to VIT and said, okay, you know, you guys talk to these guys. And that's it. And that's how we had the incubation and some grants, right? And then we met Pratik, and these networks have helped us find the right people who told us how to go forward, right? We met like sensor companies from China and some people who have done these researches for a lot of years from Netherlands. So these are all like, you know, this whole community that came around Symbionics core team. I think that's where and because of that, a lot of breakthroughs happened over time. Mm. So the specific knowledge that we gained during the building Symbionic process, right? I think that would be the major breakthrough, but it didn't happen immediately.
You know, what advice would you give to other people building an MVP based on your experience? Any do's or don'ts, probably?
I mean, there are a lot of don'ts, obviously, but then I'll just say having low-cost prototypes, just build something with this, which is not your ideal, right? But it still works to an extent, right? And then keep iterating it. And that iteration process, say, for example, out of your 100, finish 10, and then keep iterating the rest of the 90. And that process should be fast. The feedback loop of your iterations should be as fast as possible. And I think that process has helped us. So build a process that works for you. I mean, it took us some time to figure out what works for us, and this works. And the second thing would be, don't be afraid to talk to people, tell your ideas. I mean, the society the outside world tells us to keep ideas, you know, safe. Mm. And don't talk to people, don't tell what you're building, you know, somebody would steal it. No, yeah, I agree with that paranoia. But then as a founder and somebody who's trying to make an impact, I feel like the more people you tell about what you're trying to create and impact, it would inspire a lot more people to come join your cause. And if it is a great cause, people would help you, right? And I think that is something you need to do, because when we started talking to subject matter experts and, like, you know, these guys are open to help you. There are people that want to help you, but then they're just waiting for you to reach out to them. So do reach out to people who can help you out. I guess that would be second. And third, I guess when you're recruiting, don't fall into the trap of experience, like, oh yeah, I have some money, I would hire some of the most experienced guys, because what you need is at early stages of your building MVP, what you need isn't experience, although all your investing parties would tell, okay, where's the experience, but then what you need is specific knowledge, yes, but then more than that, you need high energy people who are also fast learners. Mm. And these guys would definitely create impact, like tremendous impact, because they would sit and solve problems with you. And that's what you want. You need people who can solve problems with you and not just, you know, direct a bunch of people on what to do. Mm. That you can find consultants for, I guess. I mean,
in terms of the technology, you know, what is special about the Bionic Arm that you're building then?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the few things that we have done is focus a lot on the intuitiveness and the comfort of the use, right? Mm. So affordability is what is our core focus or a North Star, you might say.
Yeah.
Right. But then there are key few user goals that has translated into product goals. And those key user goals are like, say, when I first tried a prosthetic hand, a little bit advanced prosthetic hand from the market, right? These were all like, you know, the imported products from US, China, whatever. Mm. The major hindrance I had was I could not intuitively use the hand. Like I had to think about how I was using. Mm. So when we started building Titan is what we are dubbing the hand now. When we started building this, what we first realized was it has to be intuitive. Like people who are going to use our product are not engineers. They are not like, you know, going to understand all of the nitty gritties, although they would get adapted to it. But what we wanted was when you wear it, you know how to use it. Like you don't have to. So when you pick up a glass of water, you don't think about how you are picking it up with your normal hand, right? That's how, like, you just think, okay, I want to pick it up, so you just go and pick it up. But when you use your prosthetic hand, if every time you have to use your hand, you need to think about, okay, I need to do this, and then I have to go pick it up. It gives you a lot of mental stress.
Yes.
And what happens is a lot of people, because of this mental stress, like reject their hands. I've seen there are case studies of people who sold their hands to buy a prosthetic hand and then keep it in the cupboard and only use it, like, you know, during some marriage, which is a very sad thing. What we want is that people should at least use it to bring back their sense of, you know, okay, I can do this, you know. Oh, is just by riding a bike, I can do it probably. So that sort of confidence comes only when the product, you're confident in the product itself. Mm. So that's where we started. I mean, this is the focus of our research itself. Mm. So when we worked on this, we understood that two main things is needed for the intuitiveness. One would be the user experience and user interface itself, mm. on how would a user would use this. So do you need an app? Do you need so these are all some questions that we had in mind, right? Or how do you how does the hand understand, okay, this is what the user is trying to do. So we worked a lot on the sensor technology, mm. and we've built an innovative sensor system for the hand, which works. So basically a couple of sensors are placed on the stump of your muscle. So so the stump is the place where your hand is amputated, yeah. Right? So we place sensors on your muscles and then we collect action signals from your muscle and then make sure the system understands what it is that you're trying to do. And so say, for example, you're trying to open your hand or close it or change your grip pattern. So these are all sort of things that has become that we are trying to do. And it's intuitive also. Like, you know, we try to make it as close to using your normal hand as possible through this, basically through what we are building. There are some places where we needed a lot of data. And I guess that's where I come in. And I also, as you, I think you mentioned it, right, guinea pig for your own development. So basically we've done a lot of research on me, I guess. So that's one cool thing, yeah.
Have you actually used this in like your day-to-day life then? You know, going shopping, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, we're still in the process of the wearability part is where we are trying to solve it now.
Yeah.
Like, so once that is solved, I just use it. But I have used it to ride a bike.
Okay.
I mean, and that was my personal major ask was to be able to ride a bike.
Okay.
Nice. And that gave me the sense of independence. And I've spoken to users and everyone has that one thing that they want to do, which they are not able to do, which would give them that sense of independence. But yeah, I have been able to do that. And I'm pretty confident about if I'm able to ride a bike, I'll probably be able to do a lot more things with this.
People's reactions then, seeing you with that arm?
I think I should explain it in terms of the contrast, right? Because, and this was pretty new to me. I've always been this not caring guy, but then when I lost my limb, I would see a lot of sympathy in a way that would also irk me a bit. But then, that's so sad. Are you married? These are all questions you get in India, right? I mean, seeing me with the hand, obviously people have been like, whoa, what? That's cool. That's so cool. And I've had people like, you know, I mean, I've had friends ask me, hey, when is this hand coming out? I want to see you with this cool stuff and all that. And that's kind of exciting a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, gives you more motivation, I suppose. Yeah. In terms of the empathy, you know, how would you build that into the product?
I guess you, for the empathy part, I feel like that is inherent to for us to, like, you know, when we started, both me and Niranjan, Niranjan is my co-founder. When we started, I think the major part of why we built this was stemmed from the idea of empathy, because I could feel that it. So when I lost my limb and I could not find something, when we started Symbionic, I guess before we started, I met with a few other amputees, some who were like pretty old, like 60, 70 years old, and I realized that this problem is not. So what I was facing, I felt that I was pretty isolated in this because I don't know any other amputees, right? So when I lost my limb, I just knew my friends and I felt pretty alone. But then when I also didn't find a solution, and it just exacerbated that problem. So meeting other people with same problem as mine, it gave me this sense of both, you know, not being alone, but at the same time, this crisis that, okay, there is this huge problem and a lot of people are facing it. And I also understood that I don't think a lot of people are understanding what the problem itself is. It's not robotics. The problem is not high tech. And it is. And I think that's one small place where the empathy part comes in, right? It's using your hand is not just something that you use for dexterity. It also gives you a sense of independence. Like, you know, when you need help from someone to do very, very small things, right? That slowly chips away a lot of your confidence on yourself. And what happens is that eventually leads to a sense of personal identity loss or crisis where you don't, like, you know, pursue your dreams. And this is not an isolated case. A lot of people do face this. And I've seen, like, you know, one of our first users, Kaveri, this girl lost her limb in her early childhood, like some 8 or 10 year old, when she was 8 or 10, I think. And it was a road accident. But then this girl has always wanted to be an artist. And she comes from a very rural and poor background. But then the thing that she faces, right, day to day, where people don't, like, you know, people don't see her as an artist, they see her as an amputee. That chips a lot of her confidence away. And we've had these conversations, right? And she also wants to act in movies. Okay. But there is this fear that I can't go in front of camera with my stump or in front of people with my stump. So inadvertently, a lot of amputees cover up their stump because a lot of people stare at it. And that small thing is something a lot of people don't understand. So it's not about the robotics, it's not about the technology, but it's about the human itself. And that's where we want to change how people look at disability itself. Disability in the sense, you know, what we're targeting is, oh, okay, you've lost your limb. That's fine. I mean, there are solutions out there, I guess. So it's not the end of your life, you know. And that shift of attitude will tremendously impact the way people think about disability. I mean, and that's something that we are trying to achieve, at least in India now. So yeah, I guess.
Yeah, awesome stuff. In terms of the financials, then, I'm assuming you've trying to raise money or have raised money, pitching, etc. How's that going?
Yeah, I mean, when we started off, we got a grant of 10 lakh rupee from Nidhi Press, VIT incubation. And then following on, once we built our prototype, they gave us an equity investment of 30 lakhs. This was from BIRAC. But I think that's about it. We've built so much of technology with that. So I'm pretty proud of the team. Currently, we're also trying to raise some seed investments from here on. We've got some offers. We're just trying to see what works and how we can move forward. And hopefully things go well from that aspect. It's not been the most easiest ride, I must say, like the fundraising part. Also, that does take up a lot of our time, which essentially is time taken away from the product and the users. So I'm just trying to figure out how to mix that and work together.
I'm surprised you're getting pushback. I would have thought this was easy. You know, you're helping people. I know you're helping disabled people.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we are. But then again, it's a when you're talking about money, the end of the day, it comes to the economics of it, mm-hmm. I guess. And then economics-wise, the market is pretty niche,
right.
And our North Star is to make this affordable. So I guess that does not align with the making a lot of money. Not sad that most VCs or investors would have, but then we have met very kind people with money. So I guess we are just keeping our fingers crossed to see if somebody would be invested enough to make these impacts, mm-hmm. right? And I think making social impact and at the same time, not like, you know, losing money is a very high possibility. Like you just need to figure out, it's also one challenge that you need to solve, but I think it's solvable.
Yeah. You mentioned you went through incubators, accelerators. What was the best sort of advice you received?
I think, yeah. So we got a lot of very good advice. We were super fresh, right? I didn't have a lot of idea on how to build a tech startup. Mm. I don't come from a tech background, unfortunately, but then, when we went, we got this accelerator. We got into this accelerator program, ATF Labs,
yeah.
in Bangalore, and that was such a surprising thing because at that point we did not have a product itself. So they just took us on face value that we were going to build something, and that was pretty, uplifting for us as a startup. And then a lot of things they said helped us come to this point, you know, reprioritizing. And I think. Pratik Madhav, the founder and CEO of the Accelerator program, like, you know, he would consistently tell me how to focus on things that matter, right? And he would give us some templates on how to do that thing, like how do you refocus on your work and because as a founder there's so many people and things that want your attention. And if you give it away freely to anything that, you know, comes, you're just setting yourself up for failure. So I think that has helped. I mean, we've sorted through what we need to do now, tomorrow, like, you know, those kind of things has helped me personally as well, I guess. And I think a lot of support or help from ATF and Pratik and even VIT has been in terms of giving us this hope that what we are doing, you know, it's the right path that we are taking. It's not something arbitrarily decided stuff that won't work out. So I guess that is pretty helpful.
In terms of the business model then, what are you thinking about that then? And obviously you said low price points.
Yeah, I think this might change. But then when we started off, we thought we would make low-cost 3D printed hand. Like, you know, at least majority of the parts would be 3D printed. So we could also customize it to users.
Yeah.
So every hand is different and the colors, the size, we wanted to be able to give that level of customization to users and see how we could also fit that in the price point. And so that is one of our action items. And then the second action item on how to reach our users, right? Industry standards state that we need to work with people like prosthetic companies, prosthetic clinics, right? And so that's something we would be doing because I guess giving them good products is what is required also. I mean, they reach out to the most number of users. So we working with nonprofits currently, we're working with prosthetic clinics, and we're also directly getting involved with amputees. We go to their places and we meet them up, we talk to them, their problems, pain points, and how the solution can be for them, right? So these are all things that we are trying. So I think direct B2C and B2B would be some things that we are kind of exploring. And mostly, I think we would be manufacturing a lot of our parts ourselves, specifically for the customizable parts. And then the rest of the things would be automated, I guess. I mean, we would source it. And we've pretty much organized most of our BOM for scaled manufacturing. It's just that the optimization and stuff is what we are trying to get sorted by this year.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the team. Who's helping you out on this one?
Yeah, so when I started, me, Hari, Niranjan, and Aditya, So Aditya was someone I met through a friend, but then Niranjan and Hari were my very close friends from ninth grade.
Okay.
So we've been friends for 12 years now.
Oh, nice.
Hari came out of Qualcomm at that time to join us, and he was an engineer at Qualcomm, and Niranjan was doing his master's. Mm-hmm. And now all of us have, so Hari is now consulting us on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. in terms of sensor technology and stuff. We work with, we've had really, I'm sorry, Niranjan is my co-founder, CTO.
Yep.
He's taking care of the technical part of things a lot, and he also had to learn so much outside of his own domain.
Mm.
So kudos to that. And then, what happened, which was like very fortunate for us, is being in VIT, we also had access to a huge pool of talent, talented engineers, and
yeah.
And we could just go and grab, hey, you know what, you can come join us, like you guys, you look cool. So we did that. We found a couple of very, very interesting and smart people to mm-hmm. join us. So Tarun, Shakti, these guys came on board at a very crucial time, helped us with the design, the electronics, the R&D, and I guess that has helped us reach this point. And yeah, I mean, that is the team. We're still a very small team. We're trying to make more, do more stuff, but then we'll be scaling sometime soon, I guess.
What's the community like then, the robotics community?
I think I can imagine what you're imagining when you say robotics community.
Mm.
I think that's there, right? But then what kept us, there is this startup community instead, I could say.
Yeah, yeah.
This group of people who I met during my incubation at VIT. So we would all be in this one huge co-working space, and then there's like a lot of other startups. So we obviously you go and interact with them, right? And I've made so many really good friends who are building some amazing technology out there. Some of them have, recently raised fundings. They got 100x and all of that. And I'm so incredibly proud of them. But then these guys also, they share such an enthusiasm with what I'm building, and it's the same from my end. But then whatever help I've needed, right, in terms of making technical decisions or solving some problems, they've always been there, right? I could just go approach them, hey, you know what, I have this some problems I'm facing, could you give me some advice or just give me some time so I can run it by you and then make some decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that has helped a lot, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Last few questions then. 2022 around the corner. What can we expect?
Yeah.
What is it you want to happen in next year?
Yeah, we have some pretty exciting plans from this year onwards. Mm-hmm. We might be raising funds, but apart from that, our product goals are to launch our product in Jan to our first set of users. We've identified three of them,
mm-hmm.
pretty interesting people, but then we were working to find 10 users to whom we can provide our hand,
mm-hmm.
and they would be our champions for Titan, like,
yeah.
And this is in Jan, and moving on from there, we would be kind of we are planning to reach out to 100 users by end of 2022, and by 2000, like in the next 5 years, we want to impact 1 million lives, and that is a solid goal that all of us at Symbionic have in mind. So that's what we are working towards. I mean, we have that as a North Star, and I guess this currently the short term goal of reaching 10 users, we want to give it to them for free. And the way we are doing that is by we're starting a crowdfunding campaign, a Kickstarter campaign, where anyone, any kind person could just, make some sponsorship, like sort of a donation,
mm-hmm.
on their behalf, and help us buy one prosthetic to them. So it covers our manufacturing and assembly and all that costs. Also, give us a little boost to reach the 10 mm-hmm. users mm-hmm. as soon as possible.
How's that going? Is that started yet or not?
No. Just setting up the assets for the campaign and launching it as soon as possible. I guess a week or so. But yeah, if anybody wants to reach us, they can just call me or mail me.
Yeah,
always available. Yeah.
This sounds like Iron Man. Remember, you're the Tony Stark of India, I think.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's not like I haven't thought about, like, you know, just open my cupboard and see, oh wow, there's like 10 different designs of hands. Probably something I would do in the future.
Definitely. Definitely look out for that. Advice for our first time founders, what should they be focusing on initially?
I think if I was younger, or when, if I could talk to the person who started this, I would tell him to be pretty clear on what the vision is and the, what the product is, and be very specific, product specific. Do as much of research and, like, you know, try to build as much of things as possible. So that would give you very much, like, a lot of specific knowledge. I think we spent a lot of time just arbitrarily researching instead of building, right? So I guess that building part is pretty important and precious. That time is very precious. So spend a lot of time building, and then have a vision of how you're going to reach your users. And in that sense, talk to your users a lot. Like, even before you start building or start doing things, go and meet your users. And the second you start doing that, you know what to prioritize. Because a lot of times what happens is, we as innovators or founders, we want a lot of very cool stuff, and there's a lot of noise in the background, like, you know, do this, do that, do this, do that. But end of the day, the exact users who share the pain point that you want to solve are the ones who would tell you exactly what they want. And consistently talking to them with the proper organized questions or thoughts that you have in mind will like 10x your speed of, you know, building your product or your company's growth. And that's what, so treat your users as your first set of investors. Don't avoid them. I guess, I think I've seen this happen where a lot of founders, first-time founders, specifically first-time founders, are, like, you know, slightly hesitant to go and talk to their users. There's this hesitancy of rejection or, you know, being ready to, before we go. It's the same. And that, I guess, is, like, you know, something that you need to work towards removing that hesitancy, and just go and say, hey, you know what, I'm building this, do you need it? And do that, whether you are a founder, you're just building a product or anything, and things would change for you a lot.
It's been a great journey. How would you sum up your journey so far then?
I mean, it started as an accident, but I guess it put me on a track to create impact, I guess. So making impact does not need you to be a genius. It just needs you to have a clear vision of and clear vision, perseverance, and, you know, having a really cool team around you, I guess.
Rishi, thanks for coming on the show today. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been nice talking to you.
If people want more information about you and Symbionic, what must they do?
They can reach out to me, rishi@thesymbionic.com, or they could just, you know, check out our website, and we have, you can Google The Symbionic and you'll find a lot of our details, so you can see that, I guess.
Awesome stuff, Rishi. Thanks for coming on the show, buddy. Wish you all the best.
Thank you. Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Thanks to Rishi for coming on the show today. I really enjoyed it. And please do check out thesymbionic.com. They are building something amazing. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to the Indian Startup Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for supporting the podcast, and let's connect on Twitter @IndianStartupSH. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye now.